saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Now, the CNA 938 World Report.
I'm Benji Hyer in London.
And I'm Jagruthi Dave in Washington. Today, governments around the world extend their economic bailout plans as COVID-19 continues to strike.
In Britain, furloughed workers are told they'll get another 4 months of government money.
We stood behind Britain's workers and businesses as we came into this crisis, and we will stand behind them as we come through the other side.
Across Europe, there are fears coronavirus infection rates are about to spike. We'll have a report from Brussels.
We'll also talk to our correspondent in China after new infections were identified in the city of Wuhan.
And in Washington, President Trump's health officials warn about the huge risks of reopening the economy too soon.
There is a real risk that you will trigger an outbreak that you may not be able to control.
That's ahead on CNA 938 World Report after the latest news.
From bureaus worldwide, this is CNA 938 World Report. I'm Jagruthi Dave in Washington.
And I'm Benji Hyer in London. The last few hours have seen several governments around the world take further steps to try to protect their economies in light of the coronavirus pandemic. In India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced a $260 billion bailout for his country and indicated the lockdown there won't be lifted later this month as planned. In the United States, Democrats in Congress are proposing another $3 trillion stimulus package. And here in London, the British government's programme to pay the wages of workers furloughed due to coronavirus has now been extended until the end of October. As Stuart Smith reports from London, a quarter of British workers are now covered by that scheme.
When the UK's finance minister, Rishi Sunak, first announced the furlough scheme in March, it was a jaw-dropping moment that brought home for many workers the gravity of the economic catastrophe about to unfold. For the first time in British history, a government stepping in to pay people's wages in the private sector to try and stop them being laid off for good. The state has been funding 80% of employers' pay, up to a maximum of around $3,000 a month each. Now the Chancellor of the Exchequer is extending it.
This scheme has been a world-leading economic intervention, supporting livelihoods and protecting futures. I'm extending this scheme because I won't give up on the people who rely on it. Our message today is simple. We stood behind Britain's workers and businesses as we came into this crisis, and we will stand behind them as we come through the other side.
The scheme is costing around $17.5 billion per month, with 7.5 million people already furloughed by almost a million businesses. There will be no changes until the end of July, but even past that point, employers will have 80% of their monthly pay guaranteed. The difference from August will be that employers will be expected to contribute more and to allow people to come back to work part-time. It's hoped this will keep workers out of unemployment while supporting a transition back into full-time work. Kate Bell from the UK's Trades Union Congress says it's a relief.
That is welcome news. And obviously, all of these decisions are being made amidst a time of huge uncertainty about where we'll be in July, what's happened to kind of the health impacts, our abilities to be able to control the virus and just how viable it is for businesses to go back.
But it's clear that some British industries will not be able to return to normal by October and have already started to lay off staff rather than furlough them. Richard Burge is chief executive of the London Chamber of Commerce and Industry.
I really worry about the hospitality sector, though. In London, it's 20% of our workforce involved in that. And I have to say, hospitality and tourism is going to look pretty grim throughout the summer.
Under the UK's roadmap out of lockdown set out this week, much of the hospitality and tourism sectors will have to remain closed until at least July. The British government hopes this extension provides a much-needed lifeline to industries on the edge. But the opposition Labour Party's Annalisa Dodds believes Mr Sunak's announcement doesn't go far enough.
So he needs to provide more information about that employer contribution now. He also needs, surely, to provide more information about the alternatives to this scheme.
Rishi Sunak has promised more detail on how the next phase of the scheme will work in the coming weeks. It'll have cost around $130 billion US dollars by October, according to some estimates. He knows it can't go on forever, partly because it would be unaffordable, and partly because he needs to encourage people back to work as soon as it's safe for them to be there. Stuart Smith, London.
Meanwhile, other European countries are being warned of a new wave of COVID-19 infections as countries begin to ease lockdown measures. In France, primary school children are being allowed to return to school for the first time in 2 months. And in Belgium, all shops have been allowed to reopen, provided they put social distancing measures in place. Lucy Hoff is our Europe correspondent, and she sends us this report from Brussels.
Queues outside major stores like IKEA and Zara, cafes serving takeaway coffee, even a one-way system for pedestrians in the busy shopping centre. Life in Brussels now resembles something like normality. It comes as the Belgian government takes further steps to loosen the strict lockdown in place for 2 months, with bars and restaurants possibly allowed to reopen in early June with strict capacity limits. In France, around 1 million children are returning to school, with the priority nurseries and younger children aged 5, 6 and 10. The country is being divided into red and green zones, depending on the rate of infection and the number of hospital beds. Prime Minister Edouard Philippe said badly hit red areas like Paris would still see some restrictions to everyday life.
Dans d'autres départements.
Some areas are still seeing an active circulation of the virus or a lot of pressure on hospitals. Those are classified as red areas. We will be ending the lockdown there, but some restrictions will remain in place. Middle schools will remain closed, and so will parks and public gardens.
In Spain, just over half the population is now seeing a looser confinement, with outdoor terraces of cafes and restaurants open at 50% capacity. Small shops can be open to the public for the first time since early March. Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez warned Spanish citizens that even with a more relaxed lockdown, the battle against the coronavirus is not over.
I would like to say again, the virus hasn't disappeared. It's still there lurking. The fight against the epidemic is continuing because it hasn't been extinguished, nor will it be extinguished until we find a vaccine or a definitive therapeutic remedy.
Spain will require all visitors from abroad to quarantine for 14 days if they arrive in the country after May the 15th. It's one of a number of countries said to be considering mandatory quarantine for foreign travellers and citizens travelling home to limit the spread of the virus. European Commission spokesperson Stefan de Kerschmacher said communication between member states about this was key moving forward.
I think what is very important is that we bear in mind the joint roadmap towards the lifting of COVID-related measures, which stresses the fact that, for instance, when you have neighboring member states, it's very important that these neighboring member states stay in close contact with each other and see what is done. Secondly, yes, you have to look at the epidemiological criteria and the epidemiological evidence, obviously, before taking such measures. And this may be different depending on the situations on the member states. So this is an assessment that has to be made when deciding whether or not to go ahead with quarantines, whether or not to go ahead with an exemption from quarantines.
In Italy, bars, restaurants, hairdressers and beauticians can reopen from next week. The reopening of some of the hospitality sector was originally planned for June the 1st, but has been brought forward due to pressure from regional leaders. Strict social distancing will need to be followed, though, with restaurants asked to place 4 metres between diners. Lucy Hoff, Brussels.
Still to come on the programme, Disneyland is up and running again in Shanghai. We'll get an update from China on the country's cautious reopening.
In our Tuesday focus on the environment, we'll hear about a Brazilian military operation to protect the rainforests.
And one of President Trump's top public health officials warns of needless suffering and death due to the coronavirus in the US. Simon Marks will have that story at around 6:45.
Stay with us as CNA 938 World Report continues.
Welcome back to CNA 938 World Report. I'm Jagruthi Dave in Washington.
And I'm Benji Hire in London. Now to China, where there's been a new cluster of coronavirus infections in Wuhan, where COVID-19 is believed to have originated. It comes more than a month after authorities there lifted a lockdown on the Chinese city. Reports say health officials are now planning citywide testing for the virus over the next 10 days. Earlier, I spoke to Patrick Fok, our correspondent in Beijing, and started by asking him how worried Chinese authorities are about the reports of new infections in Wuhan.
Well, the fact that it's happened in Wuhan, the original epicenter of the virus, has raised some alarm bells. These were the first cases of infections. They were locally transmitted infections reported since April 28th. That was when the city lifted its 76-day lockdown. So there is some concern, but you have to put this into context a little bit. All six cases were previously asymptomatic carriers of coronavirus. They were all under quarantine already, and they were all staying in the same residential compound. So it does give you the sense that authorities do have some control over the situation, although it does raise some question marks as to how many other asymptomatic carriers there are in Wuhan at the moment. But the bigger concern really is in the northeast of the country. There have been clusters of infections in several different provinces in the north, and they just haven't been able to stamp out this problem. And this is coming a week before the most important day on China's political calendar, when the National People's Congress will be gathering to set the social and economic agenda ahead. And a lot of people are expecting some positive news to come then, either to say that the economy is getting back on track, or even that there may be a final victory of sorts over COVID-19. But it doesn't seem at this point as though authorities are going to be able to deliver a message like that.
And Patrick, one of the big headlines coming out of China also has been that Disneyland in Shanghai has reopened. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, this was a big step for Shanghai and also a big step for Disney. Reports are saying that the company wiped off around $1 billion in its fiscal second quarter because of the coronavirus outbreak. And all the other parks around the world are still closed, in Tokyo, in Hong Kong, in Paris and the US. So Shanghai is the first one that's back open for business, and that's good news for Disney. They are still taking lots of precautions, of course. So these meet and greets where you have characters that come and hug visitors, they're not allowed at the moment. So Mickey and friends and so on and so forth, they are waving to visitors from afar. And of course, there are temperature checks and people have to wear face masks. The same sort of precautions that you have across much of China at the moment, they're being applied in the park. Now, the government told Disney that they were allowed to have 24,000 visitors per day in the park, which is about 30% of its 80,000 capacity. So still some way to go in that sense. And in fact, Disney CEO said they wouldn't even take 24,000. They're keeping numbers below that for safety's sake for the time being. But certainly this is good news for Disney, good news for Shanghai. A lot of parents in Shanghai were saying, you know, this is great because we've got somewhere to take kids out to after months of being cooped up indoors. At the same time, there are, of course, lots of people saying they wouldn't go just at this point. Better to be on the safe side for now.
Patrick Fok, our correspondent in Beijing. Now, every Wednesday at this time, we take an in-depth look at news about the environment. This week, Brazil has sent nearly 4,000 troops to three separate cities close to the Amazon rainforest in a bid to halt deforestation and protect the country's most precious ecological resource. Often called the world's lung, the Amazon produces 20% of this planet's oxygen. Think of it, one breath in every five that you take. Our environment correspondent Martin Points Roberts told Stuart Smith all about the military operation.
Those troops are not only armed forces, but they will also have specialist chemical warfare experts that will help in any potential spread of the coronavirus. Because obviously, currently, there's a big fear that the coronavirus could spread from the big centres. The fear is because we're in the middle of a pandemic, a global pandemic, it's being used as a smokescreen. The eyes of the world are focusing elsewhere. And whilst that's happening, deforestation has been going on unabated. The first 4 months of 2020 have seen 1,200 square kilometres removed. That's around 460 square miles. And it's a strange time because usually deforestation in Brazil does not kick in right now because it is in the middle of the rainy season. Now, if you imagine going to any woods in the pouring rain and then trying to cut trees down, it's going to be a big, big job.
Who are the people cutting down the forest?
You'll have small farmers and small members of communities that will clear some land in order to grow some food. But obviously, the big corporations that we've become aware of in terms of deforestation, clear great big areas and prepare it to grow things like soy and even graze cattle. Now, this usually happens a bit later in the year and they often use fire. And obviously, forest fires are a major problem in terms of what they release in terms of carbon dioxide.
How do we know this is happening?
There has been some footage that has been analysed by NBC News. Basically, European Space Agency satellites have been flying over, taking photographs, looking at what's been going on in the Amazon basin. And these photographs that have been analysed, as I said, by NBC in USA, have shown that there are several areas within mainly the western state of Rondônia, which is right to the west, kind of on the right near the border of Bolivia. And that's an area that shows that huge amounts of very, very recent deforestation has taken place. So there seems to be a jump in around 64% of deforestation this April as compared to last year.
The president, Jair Bolsonaro, doesn't seem hugely invested in tackling deforestation. Why is that?
He has said that he wants to open it up further for mining, logging, and even more farming and agriculture. It was interesting that he made an address at the United Nations in New York a few months ago, and it basically, he said that to describe the Amazon as the heritage of humanity was a fallacy. It's a misconception that the rainforests in Brazil are seen as the lungs of the world.
If that's his approach, why the attempt now to protect the rainforest?
Brazil's vice president, a guy called Hamilton Moraro, he basically said on Monday this week, we do not want to be labelled by the rest of the world as an environmental villain. Despite the fact the coronavirus has led to create this smokescreen in which the deforesters and the illegal loggers can operate, there are still signs that under the direction of the environment minister, the level of deforestation can be lowered from the kind of figures we've seen over the last few years.
Martin Points Roberts there talking to Stuart Smith, and they'll be back with more environmental news at the same time next week.
Still to come today, all the business and sports news to get your morning underway, plus...
One of America's top public health officials warns the country will risk needless suffering and death if it reopens its economy too rapidly. I'm CNA's US Bureau Chief Simon Marks, and I'll have that report at around 6:45.
And is there any way of keeping prisoners safe from coronavirus? That story later, but first, the latest news and traffic.
Good morning. We're back with more of today's CNA 938 World Report. I'm Benji Hyer in London.
And I'm Jagruthi Dave in Washington. Time for a look at all the business news now, starting with the US markets. And it was a grim trading day on Wall Street. From New York, here's Will Denslow.
The Dow Jones, S&P and Nasdaq all closed down around 2%, with traders reacting to reports of new infection spikes in South Korea, China and Germany. There were big losses for US Airlines Tuesday after Boeing's CEO, David Calhoun, is reported to have told NBC that a major US airline will likely go bankrupt. Tesla also closed the day slightly down, despite President Trump backing the electric car maker's desire to reopen their California plant. William Denslow, New York.
Now a look at the markets in Europe, and they were pretty stable across the board, with the DAX in Frankfurt and the CAC 40 in Paris closing ever so marginally down. The FTSE 100 in London, though, rising nearly 1% in response to the UK government adding clarity to its plans to ease the coronavirus lockdown and, as we reported earlier, the announcement to extend the furlough job retention scheme. With more on that, business reporter Declan Curry.
The scheme to pay the wages of workers who've been put on leave because of coronavirus has been extended until the end of October. Workers will continue to receive 80% of their monthly wages, up to a maximum of £2,500 per month. But from August, workers will be allowed to return part-time and employers will be expected to meet some of their wage costs. The British Chambers of Commerce, which speaks for local business across the country, said the move would bring significant relief to employers and workers.
And in preparation for people returning to work, the British government is unveiling new guidelines for public transport. Speaking of transport, there's more troubling news for the aviation industry today, with the UK's Health Secretary Matt Hancock suggesting it's unlikely people will be able to take foreign holidays this summer because of the need to maintain safe distancing. And Brussels Airlines, Belgium's largest carrier, has announced deep cuts to its workforce and fleet size after the coronavirus pandemic forced the grounding of all of its planes. From Brussels, Tony Waterman reports.
After weeks on pins and needles, the staff at Brussels Airlines now know their fate. The carrier announced on Tuesday that it will slash 25% of its workforce, impacting some 1,000 employees. It will also shrink its fleet size by 16 planes and stop flying to 22 destinations. The company says it's taking the drastic measures to try and ensure its future survival. It expects the coronavirus pandemic to slash demand by 60% this year, with things not returning to normal until 2023. Brussels Airlines is seeking support from both its parent company, Germany's Lufthansa, and the Belgian government.
But Ryanair, one of Europe's largest budget airlines, says it's planning to start services again in July. The airline's boss, Michael O'Leary, who last month claimed that leaving the middle seat free to help safe distancing was idiotic, now says he wants to sell as many seats as possible this summer. EasyJet, one of Ryanair's main competitors, does not have a date for restarting its flights, but is keeping the situation under review. Virgin Atlantic also released its summer schedule for 2021, promising more flights to Tel Aviv, as well as routes linking Florida with Heathrow after it pulled out of London Gatwick. Meanwhile, some of the biggest names in food and drink, such as McDonald's or Subway, are beginning to introduce more open stores or drive-throughs or delivery across Europe as they plan for a slow reopening of the economy. Yet Declan says that payments will be limited to contactless only.
This is part of the whole sort of trying to get back to normal in business, and also the recognition in business that this may be around for a long time. So we have to change the way we do business so that we live with coronavirus.
And that's your business update from Europe.
Sports news now, and with this morning's roundup, here's Kate Fisher.
Starting with the latest on the EPL, and there's a fresh obstacle on the road towards play resuming. It comes in the form of the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. The city, of course, is home to five EPL teams. But sports writer Rob Harris says the mayor doesn't want games resuming in the British capital.
He says he's concerned about the welfare, the players and all those around, and just how they can return to training safely. We should hear more of that in the coming days. The players are actually receiving some assurances from the Premier League about the procedures being put in place as they prepare to tentatively return to group training in the coming weeks. So they'll be disinfectants all around the training grounds, and also they'll have to keep some distance still from each other in those early stages. We are expected to hear from the government in terms of their roadmap for athletes to resume forms of training in the coming days. One of the other big barriers, though, to the Premier League restarting has been the clubs opposing the plan to play in neutral stadiums. That would have been something the police say had been necessary, so there wouldn't be an additional burden on resources, and particularly the concerns about fans gathering outside stadiums. But now the police have eased their stance. Mark Roberts, who's the head of football policing in England, says that they'll be looking at a range of options now to try to minimise any risk to public safety. So the police giving some ground there, which could allow the Premier League to reunite the clubs again after hearing such opposition to their plans to use neutral venues.
And there's another growing problem. The number of players who also say you can't restart the sport under current coronavirus conditions. Newcastle's Danny Rose is the latest to take that stance. On Tuesday, he said that people's lives are at risk and that play should not restart until the number of infections dramatically falls. Again, Rob Harris.
Yeah, and there are many concerns. And the Premier League chief executive, Richard Masters, spoke to some of us yesterday, and he was asked particularly about the concerns of BME players as well, with the rate of infections amongst black and ethnic minorities causing concerns, and there's been some studies into that. So we are hearing concerns from players, and we had the case at Brighton at the weekend as well, the positive COVID-19 case that just reinforced those concerns about bringing players back together again and the potential risk of infection spreading. Across in Germany at Dresden, there were some cases last week, and that's led to their hopes of restarting the season this weekend being put on hold.
And finally today, Rob has news about Ferrari and Formula One.
Yes, Sebastian Vettel is leaving the team after 5 years. He's going to exit at the end of the season, whenever that does start. 32-year-old German had been earning $40 million a year, but it seems they couldn't come to an agreement, Vettel and Ferrari, over a new deal. He says it's vital that both parties can work in perfect harmony, and that clearly isn't possible. Perhaps it's surprising that Vettel never won a world title in his time at Ferrari, as he won four previously at Red Bull, and in the last season he'd come under particular threat from his younger teammate Charles Leclerc, who won more races than him last season. So there is a vacant driver's seat at Ferrari which can earn someone tens of million dollars a year potentially.
Rob Harris, global sports writer for the Associated Press. He'll be back tomorrow. And that's the sport. I'm Kate Fisher.
Still to come on the programme, one of President Trump's top public health officials says the country is risking a substantial second wave of coronavirus infections.
And in Uganda, COVID-19 is being blamed for a possible delay in the country's election. All that and more is ahead after the latest headlines and traffic.
You're listening to CNA 938 World Report. I'm Benji Hire in London.
And I'm Jagruthi Dave in Washington, where there was some dramatic testimony at a Capitol Hill hearing on Tuesday by one of President Trump's top public health officials. Dr. Anthony Fauci, a key member of the president's coronavirus task force, issued a clear warning that America is risking needless suffering and death if it rushes to reopen its economy. The testimony came as White House officials said that Vice President Mike Pence now plans to keep physical distance from President Trump for the foreseeable future in a bid to ensure that they don't both contract COVID-19. Our Washington correspondent Simon Marks reports.
Even before the Senate hearing got underway, we knew that Dr. Anthony Fauci planned to use his appearance to deliver a clarion warning to the United States. In an email to the New York Times, he said he wanted to warn Americans that they risk needless suffering and death if they reopen the country and its economy too quickly. In the event, he never used that dramatic phrase in his testimony. But just hours after President Trump appeared to be declaring victory in the battle against COVID-19.
In every generation, through every challenge and hardship and danger, America has risen to the task. We have met the moment, and we have prevailed.
Dr. Fauci said, in fact, the threat is by no means over.
There is a real risk that you will trigger an outbreak that you may not be able to control, which in fact, paradoxically, will set you back. Even if we get better control over the summer months, it is likely that there will be virus somewhere in this on this planet that will eventually get back to us. I hope that if we do have the threat of a second wave, we will be able to deal with it very effectively.
But that, he conceded, will depend entirely on the widespread availability of testing kits for the public and personal protective equipment for healthcare workers by the end of the summer. He warned that one possible treatment for coronavirus, the antiviral remdesivir, is not proving to be the wonder drug once hoped. As the hearing continued, America's death toll exceeded 81,000, and Senator Bernie Sanders asked Dr. Fauci if it's possible, as some healthcare professionals suspect, that the real death toll may be substantially higher.
There may have been people who died at home who did have COVID, who were not counted as COVID because they never really got to the hospital. So in direct answer to your question, I think you are correct that the number is likely higher.
Other Trump administration officials testifying included Admiral Brett Giroir. He oversees America's testing regimen, and he said that if that big second wave comes, he'll be ready.
So by September, taking every aspect of development, authorization, manufacturing, and supply chain into consideration, we project that our nation will be capable of performing at least 40 to 50 million tests per month if needed at that time.
But some members of the committee scoffed at that projection. Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia was Hillary Clinton's running mate in the 2016 election.
When we get to September, he says the United States needs to do 40 to 50 million tests a month to be safe. That equates to about 1.3 million to 1.7 million tests a day. Yesterday, we did 395,000 tests. We've got a long way to go.
There was a remarkable standoff between the expert, Dr. Fauci, and a member of the Senate who doesn't have much time for healthcare professionals. Senator Rand Paul, a libertarian Republican from Kentucky, wants the U.S. economy open and he wants it open now.
I think we ought to have a little bit of humility in our belief that we know what's best for the economy. And as much as I respect you, Dr. Fauci, I don't think you're the end all. I don't think you're the one person that gets to make a decision. We can listen to your advice, but there are people on the other side saying there's not going to be a surge and that we can safely open the economy.
To which Dr. Fauci suggested that humility is perhaps a dish best served when it cuts both ways.
We're seeing things about what this virus can do that we didn't see from the studies in China or in Europe. I am very careful and hopefully humble in knowing that I don't know everything about this disease, and that's why I'm very reserved in making broad predictions.
All the officials questioned chose their words very carefully, aware of the likelihood that their testimony was being watched at the White House by President Trump. Aware, too, that Vice President Pence is now being kept physically apart from the president in a bid to ensure they don't simultaneously contract COVID-19, with all the attendant presidential succession issues that would entail. Another signal to the American public from the West Wing itself that the coronavirus pandemic is by no means contained. I'm Simon Marks in Washington.
In Uganda, President Yoweri Museveni has hinted at a delay to next year's scheduled presidential election if the coronavirus pandemic has not been brought under control. President Museveni has been in power since 1986 and is expected to run again when elections do take place. Uganda has reported fewer than 150 coronavirus cases during the outbreak and not a single death. Holly Barrett's been speaking to our reporter in Kampala, Michael Baleke, and started by asking him what President Museveni said today about next year's polls.
Uganda is scheduled to hold its next election in March 2021, and President Yoweri Museveni says the possibility of having the poll process continue during COVID-19 is suicidal. Mr. Museveni, by the way, who has been in power for 34 years, believes it would be madness for people to gather at such a time when the country is struggling to cope and control the spread of the coronavirus. But some lawyers argue that the president's reaction poses a legal challenge since the extension is not provided for under the Constitution.
He has been accused in the past, hasn't he, of cracking down on opposition in Uganda. Are opposition figures saying anything about this possible delay?
Well, some opposition leaders and critics believe President Museveni wants to stay in power longer, but this time round, many are siding with him, especially at such a time when the situation requires social distancing. Opposition leaders say encouraging people to canvass for votes by gathering poses a risk and could increase the spread of COVID-19. You also need to know that Uganda has no alternative voting methods, so we vote by ballot, and many think the delay is meant to keep people safe. So they agree with the president.
And tell us the situation in Uganda right now when it comes to COVID-19, in terms of lockdown restrictions. What is life like at the moment in Kampala and beyond?
Uganda has so far registered under 150 cases of COVID-19. More than 50 people have recovered, and the country is yet to register any death. Right now, half the number of COVID cases are interstate truck drivers. These are drivers coming in from Kenya and Tanzania, where the restrictions are not as tight as in Uganda. People here remain at home. Schools, churches and mosques are closed. Only food markets and essential services are allowed to continue. So many businesses remain closed, and this has taken a toll on incomes of many homes who survive from hand to mouth. There are also reports of people running out of food. The government has been giving out food to people, but this relief food is yet to reach hundreds who need it.
Michael Baleke in Kampala talking there to Ollie Barrett. Around the world, prisons are struggling to stay on top of COVID-19 and stop it from spreading within jailhouse walls. In a bid to increase the possibility of safe distancing within prisons, some countries have engaged in substantial prisoner releases over the last few weeks. But in Britain, fewer than 1% of inmates have been released, and critics say the country is moving far too slowly on the issue. John Beaver has this report from London.
UK prisoners are not just losing their freedom, they're losing their lives, as inadequate safe distancing provides the perfect conditions for an epidemic, killing inmates and staff. Because of that, the Howard League and many other prison campaign organisations are demanding the government urgently reduce the prison population. Here's their chief executive, Francis Crook.
There are about 18,000 men who are forced to share cells. And that is contrary to UN regulations. It's contrary to good health and safety. So we're asking the government to release enough people so that prisoners have their own cell and they're not forced to share cells.
Her Majesty's Prison Service originally said it would release 4,000 prisoners to free up space. But so far, only a tiny fraction of that have been. It's also built temporary accommodation inside prisons to further spread out inmates and has banned visitors. Even so, Mike Fairhurst, the national chair of the Prison Officers Association, believes it's still not enough.
The biggest issue for us in a prison, because it's such a confined space, it's very difficult, even with small numbers, to embrace the 2 metre social distancing guidelines. It can be done, but it's very difficult. So that's why we're unlocking small amounts of prisoners to get them out into the fresh air.
The government says there's early evidence these measures are proving effective, but that safe distancing comes at a cost. Very few prisoners can leave their cells at once, meaning many are cooped up for 23 hours a day. Raphael Rowe can imagine what that's like. For 12 years, he was locked up at a maximum security prison in London. He was later acquitted and is now a journalist reporting on prison conditions around the world.
There's very little to do behind that cell door when you've done reading the book that you've read or you've done tidying that small space. Now, we're all doing that in our homes outside, you know, doing those little jobs that we've not been able to do because of our work. Well, prisoners are going through exactly the same experiences, only I think it's 10, 15, 20, 100 times more stressful.
But for many prisoners, the ultimate consequence of this virus is far worse. Richard Garside is the director at the Centre for Crime and Justice Studies.
In England and Wales alone, there's at least 2,000, and it's probably more than that, it's probably close to 5,000 or 6,000 people who, if they get coronavirus, are at high risk of very serious illness, if not death. And there's no sign that the government is taking that seriously at all or kind of doing anything to get them out of a very dangerous situation.
The fear is that without faster government action, even a short sentence for a minor crime potentially becomes a death sentence. And if infection amongst prisoners is not addressed, they will continue to be a source of community infection as thousands leave prison every week. John Beaver, Near London.
And that's our programme for today. We'll be back tomorrow morning from 6am with, amongst other things, a report about a disturbing illness that's killing youngsters in Europe and America. Doctors are searching for an explanation.
That's to come tomorrow, but next it's Asia First with Arnold and Yasmin here on CNA 938. From all of us, have a great day.